On Deck Radio, wall-to-wall baseball talk. With Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman.
The Twins are going to win the World Series. The Twins have won it.
Covering the diamond like the world's biggest rain tarp. Pete Wagner and former Twins Gene Larkin and Al Newman. On Deck Radio with 105 The Ticket.
10 innings of at-bats. A high fly to left field. See ya. Gone, a home run as Trevor Plouffe walks him off. Trevor with 5 hits on the year, a double, and his second home run. That's the way to win a ball game.
A walk-off home run for Trevor Plouffe. And the Twins now have won 3 in a row at home.
And they're back.
Yes, sir.
Third somewhat. Place in the Central. You're a Minnesota Twins.
Coming down in the low level to box right here.
Jeepers. I know. You know what?
Big leagues to the Elizabethan Twins in a matter of a month.
I'm completely off kilter here. So, you know, we kind of sit in the semicircle, so we get this deal going.
We have a rotation.
Yeah, and so Gene, we do. And so Gene, he had to be a switch hitter today, so he had to go from the right side of the plate to the left side.
Bar stool. I went
clearly
from this
not
big, big comfortable chair.
Very soft.
You're in kindergarten right now.
Gene Larkin's never met a bar stool he didn't like.
I can agree with that, Gino. You're not by yourself, pal.
Thank you. Thank you.
We've got an awesome show. Dan Gladden's joining us a little bit later.
Twins win!
And they win on a walk-off.
Yeah. The Dazzleman's going to join us.
How about that? They beat the Cy Young Award winner. They scrapped their way through a couple wild pitches. When Escobar got hit in the toe, I said, what is this, Little League?
He swung the pitch.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure did.
We got a break.
got a big break.
A big break. Pardon the pun.
But you know, you have to get some of that to turn things around. These fellas have had a tough go of it. And the thing about, I was going to say to you guys this week, you know, a little positive vibe, 3-game mm-hmm. win streak. I looked up some numbers, and the top three teams, you're talking about Detroit, Kansas City, and Chicago, a combined 20-9. The Twins have already played those three teams. So it's not like they haven't faced some stiff starting pitching, Gino, to cause these offensive woes that are going on right now.
But absolutely. They've gotten better starting pitching from Gibson. And Tommy Malone's been a savior his first two starts. And, you know, we got what we usually get from Pelfrey yesterday.
Sure.
You know, 5 innings, 5 and die, and walking too many guys in the fourth inning. But they edged out a win, and Plouffe got a big hit. He's been scuffing a little bit, and he got that, you know, cutter right over the middle of the plate, and he did exactly what he should have been.
What he was supposed to do, what the big boys do.
And, you know, 3 wins in a row at home against some very good competition. So 2 more games left in his homestand.
Well, the Royals were swagging. I mean, you know, they 12-3 win on Monday on the Twins' home opener. They're 7-0 at that time, and the Twins scrap back. And that 8-5 win, what was best for me about that was the bullpen, who had been taxed really coming into that, shut everything down. Dunsing had the injury and the tough outing there. But beyond that, it was really good. The following day, again, the bullpen was very good. Yesterday, the bullpen, very good. Boyer picks up the win. What, his first since 2010?
Much maligned Blaine Boyer.
Yeah.
So it was nice to see him get off the schneid a little bit and throw a good inning and, you know, after a real tough start. And, you know, he's been criticized in the media a little bit, too. And I think Molly did a really good job of trying to take some pressure off of him and put him in last night's game. He did a really nice job.
He did do a nice job. Now, from Paul Molitor, we've heard a lot, Al Newman, about how, you know, even he said, this is new to me, and there's things in decision-making that I'm going to have to do to get used to this. Do you think that these things are starting to work their way into his everyday being as a manager?
Almost definitely, and, you know, that's one of the questions I was going to propose to Dan Gladden later on in the show, is the fact that, you know, what's Molly's personality? I'm not asking you to compare Garden Hire and Molitor, because we don't want to get into that.
No.
Let Molly develop his own skills as a manager, his own thought process, and how he thinks is going. So I'm very happy with what I'm seeing. You know, Molly has his style. Sure, we were a little bit panicked earlier when we were getting kicked. We were a little bit panicked, but
who's
you
we?
Know, 500 is 500. No matter how you get there, the goal, I think, is at least 500.
All along, it's been that. And you know, was it Sparky Anderson that said, "You're going to win 60, you're going to lose 60. It's what you do with the other 40 that matters."
Sparky Anderson.
Well,
analogy.
Why not?
Wow.
You know, but I mean, really, I mean, it
but
really
he did
comes
make
out
a slight adjustment in the lineup. He moved Dozier to the number 4 spot. He's probably the guy with the most pop outside of Vargas. And by the way, I do have a prediction about your boy. Boy Vargas. Within the next 3 years, he will win the American League home run title. He's locked in a little bit here. Sure. He's well balanced from both sides of the plate, and he puts a good swing on the ball. Even when he misses pitches, he's right on pitch.
Now, he just became a switch hitter late in the game, correct? I mean, from my understanding, he just started that about 3-4 years ago.
Well, he's a very talented individual if that's the case. But as Gino alluded to, and Gino, you know, those guys, switch hitters with power is tough to maintain on both sides. But I agree, Gino. I like his approach, and he's on balance, and his timing seems to be good.
For a young guy, he's not overmatched. That's the first thing I look for from young guys. And I know he was up last year a little bit and did a nice job. But for him, and I watch him from both sides of the plate, he gets fooled, yes, as everybody does, but he battles every at-bat, good at-bats. Even when he strikes out, it seems like he's on pitches right now. So for me, going forward, he's the guy that could be a major, major cog in this lineup from a run-producing standpoint.
If I remember correctly, that ball he drove to...
still going.
Left. Okay, so
it doesn't off the mezzanine, this thing's still going.
It was off the mezzanine,
off the
it was still going.
Pentair mezzanine or whatever it was. When it hit that, you could hear it, boom, it was loud, and they measured it at 386. So the first thing I do, I look at the guy next to me, and I said, how in the world do they come up with that? That thing was still going. There's no way. But the pitch he nearly won the game on yesterday, if I remember, it was an outside pitch. Al Newman's doing a jig in here right now. You need to see this.
A microphone came off the stand, so now I feel like a singer.
you look like you're in Vegas working the lounge singer right now. That's classic. But he reached out, if I remember, on an outside pitch.
Absolutely.
Just drove it.
Went with the pitch real well. And so you got him from both sides of the plate, and then Arcia with that big home run the other day to win the game. And so if you get those two young guys from the right side and the left side, Vargas from both sides, obviously, but if you get Arcia a little bit, you know, the lineup becomes a lot more potent now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't have to criticize Joe Mauer for not hitting extra base hits or driving around. If those two guys in the middle of the lineup or toward the end for Arcia can drive the ball, extra base hits, home runs, this is a totally different looking lineup for Molitor.
Yeah, it definitely is. And Pete, just another little tidbit. If we could get those table setters going.
Yeah.
You know, our 1-2s and get that settled. You know, sure, Torrey hit second when he's in the lineup. But when you're talking about Santana and Escobar, neither one of those guys have drawn a walk so far. And I understand that they're offensive type players, but you got to be a table setter certain times in the game.
Is that because Danny Santana is so aggressive?
Yeah, I think he's trying to find himself. He's a very young guy, and I think there's a fine line. I will tell you that as a leadoff hitter. You do want to take certain pitches, too, but I think from his perspective, if it's a fat fastball early on in the count, he's got to let the bat fly a little bit. But from a guy who's watched the game a long, long time, you need that guy to get on base and take a few more pitches and try to, like as Al says, create the table for the older guys.
So the thinking is anyway, anyhow, and you're not, you know, sometimes it's with the bat, sometimes it's with the eye, but whatever you get on.
There's always a point in the game where you have to take pitches. If you're that leadoff guy, it's just your role, it's the momentum of the game, the feel of the game. Maybe it was a long inning and you're the guy first one up. No matter who that guy is, there's a way and an approach to every at-bat. Some of these guys are still feeling their way around. But, hey, it's first 10 games of the season. The Twins are 4-6. I think they've kind of, you know, they've gotten off the ropes from being kicked in the groin with the Santana issue. I think they're starting to get a little bit settled.
You can clearly see in the dugout that just even the way they're communicating, interacting, the swagger's a little bit better. I mean, losing is just, it really gets old quickly, and it's not what you want.
They're catching the ball better, too. I mean, the first week of the season was an abomination as far as catching the ball, especially in the outfield, which, you know, you don't expect. Infielders, you expect to make physical errors, but routine fly balls being dropped, that's going to kill you every time. So they're catching the ball better. Like I mentioned earlier, they're getting better pitching, and now the hitting's starting to come around a little bit, which is always going to be the last thing to come around typically for a team.
I watched Lorenzo Cain. If it was
good player.
In the air.
Wow.
Oh, my word. I swear. He had no business catching two or three of those baseballs. It was hideous.
I wrote him down.
Yeah.
I purposely wanted to talk to you guys about him. I thought about asking Gladden about him. He reminds me of Devon White.
Yeah, but
how
he's coming out part of his last year's playoffs in the World Series.
Devon White
Lorenzo Cain.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's a stalwart in the middle of a line. He's got a short, quick swing.
Yes, he does.
Really gets a great jump in the outfield. Tremendous 5-tool player right now.
Yes, he is. He's beautiful to watch. And when you see players like that, for all the fans out there, just take them in.
Enjoy that.
Yeah, enjoy
one.
Watching that type of player because they don't come around that often.
He glides to the baseball, and there's no movement from hips up. The only thing that's moving are his legs.
Yeah.
His head is, everything is just completely
straight
stable.
Straight line runner.
Oh,
yeah.
I mean, it's really good. And the bat, that home run he hit was pretty rock solid, too. So that was a great series win for the Twins to pick up 2 out of 3 from the Kansas City Royals. Who knows what the rain's going to do for tomorrow's game? So a win today could possibly give them back-to-back home series wins, which would really, at 4-6 now, believe it or not, we're not planning the route down. Was it 8th Street you guys went or whatever it was? We're not planning that or anything, but the fact is you just want to give yourself a chance and be rewarded for the hard work you're putting in and you know, really start making positive steps forward. And Gene, you said it last week, get off the ledge, nobody panic. It's a long season, and we hear that all the time.
Compete, right? That's what we want as fans, to watch our guys compete every inning, every at-bat, and because of their defensive deficiencies early on in the season, the first week, they couldn't compete. Now they're getting better defensive play, better pitching, so they're able to compete. And last few innings of the game, they're in the game. And that's what you want. You want exciting 8th and 9th innings with the Twins.
Right, and that's Molitor's mantra. Any way to beat the opponent, yep. Look for a way to beat the opponent. And as Gino said so nicely, compete.
Absolutely. Compete is such an important thing. And when you do, usually sometimes good things happen. And you know what? The bullpen, I think, has been really, for me, the story boy. It can get really rugged. If your starters are going 5 and you're happy with that, well, then those other guys better be able to not only do it now, but do it later.
You better not be happy
with
going 5.
Well, yeah, right? Well, I mean, when you're pitching
that's
the contact.
That's the last 4 years.
But that's what I'm
problem.
Saying. Yeah.
Why
did like,
Alan Anderson come to mind? Alan Anderson came to mind when you said 5 and 9.
The lefty.
The lefty.
If I'm winning after 5, I got to go.
He'll start sweating if he gets into the 6. That's not good. Dan Gladden's going to join us around the bend. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. And we welcome you back to On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. Gene Larkin and Al Newman in studio, and we are happy to bring on Dan Gladden, the voice of the Minnesota Twins. Good morning, Dan.
How are we doing?
What's Danny, up, Rich? Danny.
Uh-oh.
Getting on the air after a night game. How you feeling, buddy?
Everybody's good. You know, on the lineup today.
Danny, first of all, I just want to say thank you for coming on. On Deck Radio with the three of us. And just right off the get, Danny, I'd like to ask you, what your assessment is of not in comparison Molitor and Gardenhire, but what do you see that Molly's trying to do to implement his way of doing things as a Minnesota Twin manager?
Well, I think the first thing that jumps out is, you know, Molly's kind of the quiet messenger, whereas Gardy, I think, wore his emotions more on his sleeves pertaining to what happened on the field with certain plays and pitches and things like that. You know, I think Molitor's more the calm guy that gets his message across that way, and I think the guys kind of respond to that a little bit differently.
Danny, first off, I'd like to congratulate you. You have become the Vin Scully of the Midwest. You are a phenomenal broadcaster. I love listening to you. Just give me the score once in a while. Just give me the score, please.
Can you find something better than that, Gene? My word.
He's being picky, but he's complimenting you, too.
You know what, that's what I hear a lot of, is I don't give enough of the scores, and I write it down on my scorecard. Try to give the score for every new batter. So if a guy makes an out, he has a long at bat, the next guy comes up, I try to give the score there too. But
You're terrific.
Yeah.
I was just kidding, man. You're terrific. So here's a question for you. We've heard a number of years now that the culture of the clubhouse needed to change a little bit. So in your opinion, who is the Dan Gladden of this year's team? The kind of guy who got in the clubhouse when things weren't going well and kicked the stool a little bit and got in someone's grill once in a while. Who is that guy? Is it an older guy? Because we talked about Torrey Hunter having that influence, Eddie Guardado from the coaching side. Is there a younger guy that has a similar personality to you when you were playing?
I would say that between Eddie and Torrey, I would say Eddie's more toward, you know, how I could make a comment, try to make it funny, but at the same time, I'm serious about it. But it was just more or less in fun to fire somebody up. You know, you guys know me. I was a guy that enjoyed playing mad, you know, so I would try to find a way to to get mad and to go out there and play that particular day. But, you know, Torrey did a real neat thing last night, and I guess that after every win, they're going to come into the clubhouse now, and they've got laser light shows and the steam coming out. So when you come off the field and into the clubhouse, you know, you guys have been in that clubhouse. All the lights are turned off. You got a laser show going on now. You've got smoke, music. So
that's awesome.
Is that going toward the Twins' budget, the salary constraints? So
no, it was kind of neat because I was around yesterday when they sent one of the clubby kids over to the music store to pick this up and bring it back and have it set up. And you know what? What better way to present it than an extra inning walk-off win that last night?
Mr. Plouffe standing tall. Hey, and, you know, Danny, when you mention things like that, that's the type of, you know, people want to say chemistry's overrated. But those are the kind of things that build that chemistry. And when teams, obviously you look forward to shaking hands after every victory. But just knowing the light show and you wonder who might give a little dance move after the game, you start having fun as a squad.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's almost like, you know, we used to watch that old Soul Train and watch the Soul Train line dance.
That's what I'm talking about.
And that's what I would always, you know, look forward to. And then, you know, that's what it is when they come into the clubhouse. Each guy might do a little different step, you know?
Yeah.
And the funny part is probably half the guys can't even dance.
Yeah.
Danny, you were a terrific leadoff hitter, and I watched Santana. What can you tell us about Santana? Does he not take too many pitches? Does he swing the bat too often? Because his on-base percentage right now is kind of lacking. Do you see a different change that he must make to become a better leadoff hitter?
Well, I just think it comes with success. And I think that, you know, last year I think that we kind of saw what he's capable of doing. And then I think it's tough. You know, the whole team was struggling early. But he's a guy I think that needs, once he gets on base, he can be a game changer and he can steal some bases. He hasn't gotten that rhythm yet. And I think a lot of it has to do Gino, and the fact that he's playing shortstop now. And talk to him. He feels he's a better bunter left-handed than right-handed. That's part of his game. But to me, I think you would agree that shortstop is a position to where, hey, I've got to concentrate on the defense part of it every pitch. Whereas maybe in the outfield, hey, I'm not going to say I can take a pitch off, but I've got a little more time out there to kind of relax a little bit. Whereas, you know, you're playing the infield. I think the focus is more on his defense right now than his offense part.
Just like you used to work on your swing out in left field, I know.
You know the dry swings in full force.
Pete, you got something
for Danny? Yeah, Dan, I got a quick one. The bullpen, obviously, the past two games has been really good. And how big of an effort was that from Blaine Boyer?
You know, I think that was real huge for him. He needed that kind of outing there last night. But, you know, I think with all the new guys coming in the bullpen like that and new manager, you're trying to find the shakedown part as to what guy's going to settle into what role. And I think that, you know, with Dunsing going on, the way Aaron Thompson has been pitching, I think there's a comfort zone that he's kind of, you know, been allowed to maybe pitch in more crucial situations. So with that being said, now Thielbar is going to come up and probably fill, you know, Aaron's role that was earlier in the ballgame. They're just trying to find out what situations these guys can handle a little bit better than others.
Hey, Danny, Al Newman here again. I wanted to ask you, you've been doing the broadcast here for 10, 15 years now. Who was the guy that you kind of tried to emulate or you thought about when you got into this business? Because I've listened to you develop and evolve and to find your identity as a radio broadcaster, man. You are the voice of the Minnesota Twins doing a nice job.
Well, thank you very much. You know, but you know, when I first did this, you know, I didn't get any teaching or schooling. Most of the broadcasters, you guys know that I've worked with, they went to college to be broadcasters. And when Dave St. Peter hired me, I said, okay, who's going to instruct me? And they go, and he looked confused, and he goes, we just want you to be yourself. So, you know, I spent some time when I would have an inning or two off, I'd go next door and sit in the back of other broadcasters and listen to see how they described the play and the flow that they had with their partner or if they just worked alone. And, you know, Bill King from the Oakland Athletics, the late
You
know, used to be the Warriors and the Raiders and the Oakland A's. I would just sit in and listen to him talk and how he would describe it. And, you know, pretty calming voice. And, you know, the key is to try to draw this picture for the listener that's sitting home on the porch or, you know, sitting on the tractor somewhere. So I just try to do that as best I can. And again, I have a tendency, like you said, I don't give the score enough, huh?
Well, nobody, you know what, Dan, nobody ever does. If I'm doing a hockey game, that's all I ever hear. What's the score? I'm like, well, you're not listening. I just told you. So, but the one thing that you do, which is so great, is, you know, you take those elements that you've gathered in from other people, but you're yourself. And I think that's what really works, and people like that. You know, when you become yourself and you just describe what's happening as you, that's the whole battle right there.
And what you should be doing, Danny, right now, you should be in the Twins Hall of Fame right there with a number of other guys.
For sure.
That's my vote. You've been lacking that, and I wish people would recognize how much of an influence you've had on this organization, not only as a player, but now as a broadcaster.
Most
you belong
definitely.
In the Twins Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Yeah. Pepe LaRich, my guy. My vote for you, Danny, is definitely there. And love you, man, and you're
one of
the biggest trades the Twins ever made was in 87 when you got Danny.
No
question. Turned the whole thing around.
So I appreciate that. You know, Bert always reminds me of that, too. And I think it was those teams, 87, 91 guys, and you guys were part of both of them that it was chemistry, and I'm a big chemistry guy. We all got along. We loved to win, and we pulled for one another.
Yeah.
You know, we cared about one another on the field. And you know what? We hung out a lot together off the field as well. So I think there was some friendship there, and it carried over, and I think it showed on the field.
When you came here, Dan, would you ever have imagined, 20, almost 30 years later, you'd still be here working with this club?
Well, but you know what? That's so good about this organization is the stability. You look at the ownership here in Polad and the general manager and Andy McPhail and Terry Ryan, managers and Tom Kelly and Ron Gardenhire and now Paul Mollick. There's stability here, and I think that when I got traded over here, I felt that, sensed it, and I went on and played, and Al, you went on and played with some other teams, and you know, we gravitate back to where we're welcome and we enjoy it. The community's great, the people are fun, winters are long, but
we find a way to get out of here, but we always come back.
That's right. You know, our kids were raised here, so you know, it's all good.
So looking ahead, obviously, two more games here with Cleveland. Big win last night. You know, we talked a little bit about Pelfrey giving what you pretty much expect from there. Phil Hughes back on the mound again. Obviously, he probably isn't quite where he wants to be. Do you sense that he's going to start finding his game pretty quick?
I think so. I think he pitched fairly well. Just that, you know, he runs into one on a big inning, but we weren't scoring any runs. We're still, like, I think, last in a lot of offensive numbers. So once we start scoring some runs, he's going to be okay. But I think he still has what he has, what he was pitching last year. And he should be fine here today, especially with Cleveland, which is a club like Minnesota that is struggling to find, you know, some rhythm in the offensive game. So both clubs having a tough time scoring runs right now.
Last but not least, Danny, have a great broadcast this afternoon. And then I just want to leave you on this note. Yes, you do belong in that Hall of Fame, pal, and keep working hard.
I can't have nothing to do about that.
Yep, I know.
Voting, but I'm looking at the lineup here. Trevor Plouffe not in the lineup after a walkout. He's taking BP right now.
I know what you mean, right? He's not in the lineup today.
He did his, right?
And yesterday they had Torrey Hunter giveaway T-shirt day, and he wasn't in the lineup.
Maybe he was at the front gate signing those T-shirts.
Figure.
Yeah, he was.
Thanks, Andy.
So good. Dan, thanks a lot for joining us. That was Dan Gladden, the voice of Minnesota Twins, on the On Deck radio show. When we come back, more Twins talk right after this.
Completely out of control right now.
The On Deck radio show. We went David Helmer. By the way, I forgot to mention your name in our last broadcast. You were terrific.
Sometimes.
On the ice radio, 2 hours. That was like almost like surgical. It was so serious.
He's showing his versatility.
Wasn't it? Did you hear it, Tim, on your way in?
I heard the first 10
minutes of your show here. You guys are talking. You got your wish. You got a 3-game winning streak from the Twins.
Sure. Tim Kolomainen's in studio. You're going to have to hold your jets here for another segment.
No worries. I can listen. I'm going to enjoy just being in the atmosphere.
Tim is way more comfortable in studio than on the phone, isn't he?
I can hear you guys.
But he's Gino, look at that beard. Looks like the lead singer of Metallica, James Hetfield. minus the Tats. Okay, anyway, so we'll go. Couple talking points.
Are you talking wild this segment?
No, I'm so burnt out on the puck talk for 2 hours. I can't go anymore on that. A couple of things for you. Alex Rios on the DL, beaned by J.R. Graham's pitch. We hear this every year, okay? We hear some veteran players say, these young guys have got to be less amped and blah, 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 blah. Is that overrated or underrated from the hitter's perspective? And should he just take his lumps and be quiet, your perspective?
Yeah, it's one of those things where you've got to take your lumps. Yeah, he's overamped. Everybody's overamped in the early part of their career to show people that they belong and get the respect of not only their teammates, but the opposition. And he got a pitch out, you know, inside in his hands. And it's a bad situation because he's a very vital component of that lineup. And he was off to a great start, so he's going to be out a few weeks now. It's a bad deal, but you got to get over it.
Well, and I'll tell you this, Alex Rios will never be accused of being overamped.
Oh, my God. That's a great point right there.
Yeah, that's a guy that...
Mr. Very Nonchalant.
Very low-key, sometimes appears lackadaisical. But I just think a pitch got away from him. You got to pitch him inside. His arms gets extended. He's dangerous. And he had been getting a few hits in the series.
And his base is loaded. You know, the kid wants to get somebody out, and he threw it too hard, and he let it go. Bad deal.
Okay, so we hear about that every year, and I think it's kind of funny. It's always an early thing. The time clock in baseball, I think it's been fantastic. So far, the games are averaging 8 minutes less in time. You guys have been there where, you know, you get out to your spots, throw the ball around. I mean, I think from a viewer's perspective, it's kept the game tight. As players, I want you to know if that's not good.
From my perspective, the talk about the time is overrated. If it's a good game, you don't even worry about the time. It's when the game draws out where it's, you know, it's a blowout or Mike Pelfrey's on the mound. You know, I always get on Mike Pelfrey. He seems like he's the perfect example of someone who doesn't get the ball, get the sign, and throw it. He's always thinking, especially with men on base. So I think he's made a slight adjustment a little bit. But to me, that talk about timing is overrated. 8 minutes. Who remembers 8 minutes in a game?
Yeah.
That's not a big deal.
That's what I was thinking of. And you know what? Here's where I'm going to go with this time zone type thing for the games. All these new stadiums, they've got all the bells and whistles. They've got bars in them. They've got restaurants in them. Heck, you just got the people standing around as a social hour anyway. So what's the big rush? I mean, you just opened up a tequila bar out in left field. You got Herbeck's down the left field line behind home plate.
Sales are flying.
Yeah, people are socializing, and that's the type of event the game has become. They're willing to take advantage of those 3 hours. 8 minutes to me. I tell you what, guys have a routine, and the way they get in that routine so they can stand in that box and block out 50,000 fans, unlike
but
a golfer.
But they're not there. They're in the tequila bar.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's fine. They're watching it on television.
There are certain guys in the box. There are
Mike
certain
Hargrove.
Pitchers. Well, yeah, that's in the day, right?
Yeah.
But there's always a guy or two on each team that, you know, kind of messes with the time or tries to mess with the pitch's rhythm. And you do different things to psych out different guys. But that, to me, is so overrated.
Well, so now, you know, the hitters can, you know, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, quick in. You know, they're not going to let them do the Hargrove thing or Chucky when Knobloch was doing that stuff. But on the same token, there's nothing on the other side of the coin. A guy can huff and puff a la Joe Nathan and work the, you know, that deal and take all the time they want. There's nothing in that aspect of the game, though. The pitchers can take all the time they want. Is that fair to the hitters?
Well, I kind of look at it this way. I wasn't in a hurry to make an out. You know, so if it meant stepping out of the box,
oh my word,
and being a good leadoff hitter by making that pitcher be patient, that's what I did.
Can you imagine if you play with cell phone?
Oh man,
oh my God, people will be taking your picture all the time.
Double play combos.
Yes.
Dozier and Santana look to me like they have the potential to be very quick up the middle. Al,
I believe so. I think there was a opportunity. I think it was yesterday's game. Dozier kind of put a little too much air under the ball, and we were unable to turn a double play. I think it was in the first inning. But I think they're a great combo. They're both young, energetic. I like the move to him in the four hole simply because he's a strikeout guy. He's a power guy, RBI guy. I think that would suit his swing better than it would a Torii Hunter, who now is more of a serviceable type batter.
Yeah, and I think Santana's still trying to find himself as a shortstop after playing the majority of his time last year in center field. So he's made some errors this year, bad throws, a bad play at I think last week against Kansas City, we had to play at the plate. But so he's still trying to find himself. And Dozier's got a guy who's got great hands and great feet around the bag, as Al will attest to. So it's a work in progress. But I think by the end of the year, probably midseason, those are going to be one of the better tandems.
The organizational success in the first couple of weeks of the teams that are playing at this stage has been very impressive. You've got a triple double A teams, and you've got Fort Myers. No, the other A ball.
Oh, Cedar Rapids.
The Colonels with the KER.
Yeah.
They're in first place. So three of the four in first place. If you took those three teams as of like Thursday, they were something like 16-3. Some incredible number like that. Great organizational success. The question is, we hear about this all the time. How much is that going to eventually translate to the big league level? And it's not always guaranteed, correct? I mean, you could be really good down there, but this, you don't know anything. Is that correct? But it's a good sign.
You know what? How I look at it, when I look at what the minor league teams are doing, I try to look in unison with what the major league team is doing. If the big league team is struggling, Double A and Triple A are probably hot as a pistol, because those guys figure that the general managers are looking for people to bring to the major leagues. I think it goes hand in hand, but when the minor league teams are winning, doesn't necessarily mean the guys are coming here. It just means that they see an opportunity coming available in the next year or so.
Yeah, and I'm looking more at the arms in the minor leagues too. That's, you want to create depth, obviously, because of the old Tommy John syndrome that's happened with every organization. You want guys in Double A and even A ball when they first start out to throw hard, throw strikes. I know Trevor, or Alex Meyer right now has been one of those guys that's supposed to be just around the corner, but he's really struggling with his control. You want to see a situation where you got two or three guys at every level that might have a chance down the road to create some depth opportunities, or even step in to be the part of the rotation.
Do you think they're there? Two or three guys per team. Okay.
Well, I mean, you talk about the Berrios kid, you talk about Meyer, you know, Trevor May is up there right now. You've heard these same names for a number of years, and which is great. They've been pretty consistent, but they've been ballyhooed quite a bit by the front office, as they should, because their numbers dictate that. But again, big league spring training is one thing. Big league regular season is 180.
Yeah.
Totally different. So,
which you learned in the first week if you're a Twins follower.
Well, you got Price throwing a darn near complete game in Detroit. He's limited to 90 pitches in spring training, five innings, and he's out.
Yeah.
And you yank him. See, that's what makes it tough. People don't recognize that these studs are studs, and they're number ones for a reason.
Numbers mean absolutely nothing.
But what does matter
is the ability to compete. You learn how to compete. You, first of all, when you first get to your first big league spring training, you see how the game is so much faster. Not just from a velocity from a pitcher, but guys who run the bases, guys who get jumps in the outfield. Those are the things that most people don't pick out, which is a big deal. First step quickness.
Yes.
So after you figure that out, then how do you get adjustment? And how do the manager says, okay, the young guy is starting to get it a little bit. He still needs some fine tuning in AAA or AA. And then when they come back up to that jump, do they make the adjustment right away? Or does it still take them a month and a half to make another adjustment?
Quick one for you here. I'm going to give a couple of numbers for you. And I want your honest assessment here. One guy was a career 328 hitter over 19 seasons. The other guy is a career 318 hitter over 12 seasons. One guy has 112 home runs. One guy has 92. The guy that played 19 seasons has 92 home runs. So the guy that's played 12 seasons has 112. Okay. RBIs. The guy with the lower batting average is knocking in 58.5 runs. The other guy average knocking in 52 runs per season. Joe Mauer was the one with the higher home runs and RBI totals. Rod Carew with the bronze statue.
That's who I was thinking of. Rod Carew.
My point is this. Rod Carew with the bronze statue up front, Hall of Famer, perennial All-Star, batting champion, all of that. Really played first base after they moved him from second because he had the knee issues, obviously. Not a power-hitting first baseman, and there were power-hitting first basemen in the 70s and 80s. I don't care what anybody says. Why is it that Joe Mauer can have those same numbers, take the money out of it, okay, pretend there's no money? The performance is almost identical. So why does it feel like he's a little more chastised by the fans
and
the media?
For me, it's because of the lineup that surrounds Joe. If he had three or four guys who were hitting 20, 25 home runs, well, then his lack of home run production wouldn't be seen as a negative deal. He did 300, driving 60 runs, and he'd fit perfectly in the lineup. But in the past few years, the Twins have not had those power guys like the Vargases or the Sias. Hopefully this year is a starting where those two guys can maintain the power. You take away way, power, Joe looks more maligned. If you have power around Joe, he becomes a very good component of a lineup.
A very dangerous hitter.
So how does he differ from Rod, then, from that perspective, from Joe?
Well, he started off as a catcher.
Which is even, that's pretty impressive.
The whole platform for Joe is that he started out as a catcher, which elevates Joe Mauer. That money came as a catcher. Now he's a first baseman, total different appearance of what Joe Mauer is. But I tell you what, Lark said it best, put some people around him. When he was amongst that Koski group and all those guys.
And Morneau and
man, it
Torrey
looked
Hunter.
Beautiful, didn't it?
But he also had that one year where he hit a number of home runs. And I think people said, well, why can't he do it now in Target Field? I don't know. I don't know.
I watch him hit, and I think he's as fun of a hitter for me to watch as anybody I see coming to Target Field. He's fun to watch. I just think it's a fun talker because it's so combustible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, people get so emotional about it.
You either love the sideburns or you don't, right?
Yeah, well, now we're going full beard.
Yeah, it's full beard.
Trip.
If he's making $10 million, it's probably not the conversation.
It comes down to the money.
Making the most money.
It comes down to the money. Yeah. There you go. When we come back, Tim Kolomainen has these, like, the ink, smell it. It's just awesome in these books. They're phenomenal. We're going to talk about his Breakdown Sports USA book and much more. This is On Deck Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. This song will never not be in this show. Do you want to know why? Al?
Yeah.
Because we don't stop believing. You can be 0-10, and we're not going to stop believing here in this market.
Okay, that's true.
Because if you do, by the way, before we bring Tim Kolomainen from Breakdown Sports USA in, one of the things I was thinking of, I was at Wednesday's and Thursday's game, and walking into that park, it's one of those feelings you get, Al, where win, lose, or draw. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, you're going to have a
good time.
It
feels great, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's such a welcoming environment.
Yeah, there's no question. Even, when the Twins have not played very well the last 3 or 4 years, it's still a great opportunity to go downtown, get a bite to eat, even come into the park early, watch BP. It's just a fun atmosphere.
Yeah, that's
what I like
doing.
It's a great family situation.
How easy is it to, from the West Metro, per se? It is so easy to get in there. You just drive right into that ramp. You're right there on the plaza, and you've got options galore.
Yes, you do. And
stop in the Gold Mitt, take the picture.
They sink it into that space, but yet it's so cozy.
It's perfect.
Just perfect.
So we have a book in our hands. Breakdown Sports USA is the official almanac of all things Minnesota high school baseball. And the author, Tim Kolomainen, is in the house. Tim.
I appreciate it, Pete. You sound almost giddy over there, though. I think this 70-degree sunny weather is getting to you. It's summer yet. We're going to get cold.
We're holding in our hands.
Yeah, it's absolutely. All you have to do is look at the Section 6, the 3A preview of the Armstrong Falcons, the big lefty. And you just, all you have to do is look at this, and you've got it all figured out.
Well, you're happy until you realize maybe I didn't pick your team.
Oh, that's fine. Our team, nothing doing there. It was a good run.
This is it actually smells fresh. It obviously it's right out of the press. Can you tell us a little bit about time and effort that went into doing something like this?
Yeah, time and effort on this one. We kind of have I almost have a template down by now. I mean, we've done boys and girls basketball for 13 years.
Sure.
Done volleyball and boys hockey for 8. And I think, I don't want to jump the gun, but it sounds like we're going to do girls hockey for the first time this winter, too. And this is the first baseball book. So probably about 4 months or so before the start of the season, we start working on this, contact all the coaches, try to get some top player lists together, and just start gathering that information. And then over the course of 3 months or so, we have photo shoots. We invite the top kids to these photo shoots and do Q&A with them. Just trying to get as much of an opinion on the baseball season as I can. And then eventually boil it all down into about 160 pages here in front of you.
Tim, this is very professionally done. If I'm a high school kid, I just, forget about my high school yearbook. This is what I want to bring home.
Sure.
It's really a nice deal. You've done a tremendous job. And again, if I'm a high school kid looking at my competition and what's been said about them, this is something that you keep for your whole life, that you show your kids when you become a dad. It's just a tremendous thing.
Well, that's kind of what we angled for. I mean, we want it to be almost like a media guide, but we also wanted to, go full color and really make it look nice, like a yearbook.
I'm into the pictures.
Oh, yeah.
And the pictures are nice.
Well, there's a lot. And for Tim, this was his first year of doing the baseball book. And this is a guy, you guys, who works tirelessly for, you know, volleyball. You're at tournaments all year round. Basketball, you're at tournaments all year round. Hockey, you're all over the place. He's shooting pictures to fill in a lot of great action shots. This is his first book off the press. So next year, there'll be a lot of great state tournament images and sectional playoffs. Regular. You're going to go shoot a couple games after this interview.
I am. I was in St. Cloud last night shooting, and I'm going to be, a couple of games at 2 o'clock today I'm going to hit.
It adds to the depth of the book.
So do you ever get controversy from, like, you've got some great topics here. Who's the best shutdown catcher in high school? Who's the most grittiest? Do you ever have, when, after they read this, come back and say, how can you put this guy ahead of this guy? Just like professional players do?
You know, I hear a little bit of rumbling about that from guys, but I've never had anybody really just outright call me out on it. You know, I have guys say, yeah, maybe you should have thought about so-and-so.
Who rumbles?
Well, it's, you know, it's mainly
parents?
People that aren't, yeah, parents, okay. You know, their kid, yeah, their kid didn't get
well,
on the list.
Then you don't buy it. Okay, so but if it were the players, I might buy it.
Now, do you have a panel? Are you the ultimate judge here, or do you have a collection of guys?
Yeah, we have some guys that we kind of run some of this stuff past. Usually I try to get a list together to start with, and then I'll throw that, you know, bounce that off of guys, and they'll say, yeah, you know, I don't know about this, or maybe you want to think about this guy, or how about this?
Do you
this?
Have scouts that you talk to, or just the high school coaches?
A lot of coaches, but we do have some scouts. Okay. I mean, there are a couple of guys out there that have had some input into this book, too. And you'll see their names in the book, actually.
Yeah, a lot of that. You know, so take for the, you know, for instance, in this, who, myself, you, and who else wrote in this book?
Bennett Smed, Bethel University student too, who's I believe he's a senior graduating this year, journalism kid. So
as he builds his writing group, you know, we go out and we do feature stories on particular teams. You know, usually it's one in the 3A. Did you do 1-3A, 2A, and 1A?
Correct.
So three specific stories in hockey. He'll do 2-2A teams and 2-single-A teams. And, you know, you start getting people that kind of cover the game that want to be a part of this. And, you know, I'm one of them, you know, that just enjoys to, you know, be a part. I know if I was a high school player right now, and this is not a sales pitch thing. There's nothing in it for us, obviously. But this is definitely, like Gene said, something you can keep forever. It's a great keepsake.
And you know what I like about it? If I was a player or a high school coach, it compares and contrasts. You look up what do they have on their team, let alone if it's, you know, the accuracy or the numbers are all good, I'm sure, but it doesn't mean they apply for this year. But at least you have an ability scale. You can say, okay, this guy's got way more strikeouts than innings pitched. He's a dominant guy. He must be a two-pitch pitcher. So you can get some type of scouting report on your opponent through a book like this, and that's how I would use it if I was the players and high school coaches, because we know from week to week players change, but ultimately their numbers, they will reach their numbers by the end of the year if you give them time.
And you have high school coaches, everyone gets one, right? Or not this book?
Well, not necessarily, no.
Okay.
I mean,
okay.
I hope that most of them get it, but that's not necessarily
hockey,
the case.
Hockey, those guys buy them, correct?
They have in the past. We're not sure on that
past.
One this year. I'm trying to push that on the Coaches Association to try to get their hands on each of these. The one thing I like about the book, too, is it's not necessarily West Metro-based. It's not East Metro. We really try to cover the whole state. I mean, you'll see the entire state in there, guys, all the way up from International Falls down to Laverne, over to Red Wing, and, you know, everywhere.
Every team has a write-up. Every team has a scouting report. Every team has an outlook. Every team's in a section. Every section previewed. You have all section teams, Mr. Baseball finalists. You have, like Gene said, the grittiest players, the toughest outs, the shutdown catchers, all of those things. You can get this at breakdownsportsusa.com. Gene, if you're willing to take a few books in the, why don't we give one away right now?
Sure.
651-989-9105 to what? The
grittiest.
The grittiest caller. Now let's take the fourth caller.
Caller number four.
651-989-9105. We'll get this sent off
Here's
to you
one.
Right away.
I just opened the book up to no particular page. New York's Meal. Who ever heard of New York Meal High School?
If you know Janet Carvin from the 70s, I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're in this magazine. I mean, that's a...
With division, a big picture.
Yeah, with a big picture talking about their manager and how they're defying the odds.
Yep.
I mean, that's awesome. They would probably never make the Star Trip. Or the Pioneer Press.
Nope.
But here's an opportunity for this kid, whoever picks this book up, to see some of their team members. That's awesome. That's what this book is all about.
Yeah, trying to spread the word around about, you know, about the entire state, not just certain areas of the state, but Yeah, and that's one of the things. You're talking to Eric Mills as a feature story there,
sure.
too.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that is if you want, I think the game is, let's face it, we've lost a little players along the way. I think there's a lot across the country.
Definitely a hindrance right now.
Absolutely. You know? But this is an important thing that goes along. You know, it's almost the marketing factor of it. You know, you do have to recruit your players and recruit your own players back and do those
don't
things.
Don't say that word, recruit.
Well,
Rags.
Recruit your own players.
Statement by Pete Wagner.
Have you ever recruited?
This is a hockey guy. He should know better.
Hey, I left a few notes on windshields.
Hey, Gino,
I don't want to recruit.
Hey, sometimes you pass by a car, you put a note on the windshield.
Oh, that's so good.
I don't know whose car it is.
We gave away a book, right?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome. See, there you go, Tim.
Oh,
excellent. Down the chute. We're going to give one away for 5 weeks.
Perfect.
So,
that'd be great.
Cue up the callers, and then you guys, we can use this when we start talking about this. Really good come playoff time, and you really start to know who the guys are and start to follow. Tim, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Tim. Happy shooting.
Enjoy your stay here in the Twin Cities. Back up to Moorhead you go. Guys, Phil Hughes, does he get on track today? Is it going to be four in a row?
He's on track. Let's give him a break. Holy cow.
I want wins.
Twins.
He's doing his job. The offense is going to perform.
He gave up some runs.
Chance to win another series.
That's why you're not the manager.
Yeah.
That's why I'm the broadcaster. God, I got under your skin with that one. That's great.
I think he'll get the ball down. He'll keep the ball in the park.
Thank you.
Which has hurt him.
Okay.
I think he'll do it.
Acknowledgement to my right.
Today. How's that for prediction?
Al kind of acknowledged it a little bit. Thank you. David Helmer, great job. Gene Larkin, Al Newman, I'm Pete Wagner.
Go,
wonderful day. We'll be back on the air next week. On Deck Radio. So long, everybody.